What would you do if you suddenly found yourself outside your body looking down at yourself? Or maybe you're walking down the street one day, minding your own business, thinking about what to buy at the grocery store when suddenly people are walking right through you. Well, that's basically the kind of experience my guest has had and also the experiences that she's going to share with us. Today, we're going to be talking with Diane Goebel. She is the author of Transition Guides. Stay with us. We'll be talking more. Teachers of the Guidebook to Conscious Dying into the Clear Light. My guest is Diane Goebel, MSCC, CCHT. Diane, welcome to our program, and what do those initials stand for?
Well, the first one is a master's degree in community clinical psychology, and the second one, I'm a hypnotherapist.
Okay.
I have two masters.
But you won't be doing any of that to me today.
No, I won't.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Because I want to be consciously aware of what it is that I'm saying and the questions I'm asking and the things that I'm doing here. I enjoy doing this program, and I need to keep full control of my faculties. But this is kind of an experience that you describe. This is basically something that happened to you. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely.
That must have been... on top of the phrase, the most bizarre, the most disconcerting, but yet the most eye-opening experience. Tell us a little bit about it and what was going through your mind then and even today.
Okay, that's a big question. okay, I'm not going to give you all the details right now, but generally this is what happened. It was in the summer of 1971. I was just shy of my 30th birthday. And I was out having fun one day, rafting down a white water river with my husband, my teenage sister, and five friends. We were in two four-man rafts, the big raft. And my husband and I had been down this particular stretch of river before. The others were all newbies. And so he was in one raft, and I was in the other. And we were in a particularly dangerous section of the river, and depending on where the water level is, whether it's rained a lot or not, it depends on the water flow. And so the first time we went down, it had rained quite a bit before, and so it was easy to get through this section. But this day, it hadn't rained for maybe a couple of weeks, and it was different, and so you had to read the river differently. And we misread the river. And my husband and his raft went down fine, but then my people got in the raft, and we got all messed up, and we got turned around, and it was just very chaotic, and I ended up sliding off the raft and was sucked under the raft. And the next thing I knew, I was above the river and the forest looking down at what was going on. And my husband had come running back up because all of our stuff had dumped out of the raft and was floating down the river, and so they knew something had happened, and so they came running up, and I saw him standing on a rock looking like he was going to jump in the water, and I knew that was silly. And so I went down and tried to get his attention and tell him that I was right here. Don't go in the water. But I put my hand on him, and it went right through his body, and he paid no attention. And that's when I realized I was dead. Not when I was above the river, but at that point, I went, oh, my God, I'm dead. But at the same time, I was conscious. I was aware of myself. I was aware of where I was, what was going on around me, and I was still me. It was very bizarre, mind-blowing. And I was not a religious person, although I'd had some Christian background, but this to me was like I had no idea what was going on. And then all of a sudden, I experienced myself speeding through this dark space with lights like flashing by. And there was a brilliant white light far in the distance. I was joined by a being of light who I felt was my guide to the other side, who knew all about me and loved me unconditionally. And we communicated telepathically. During this part of the experience, I experienced the overwhelming love of God just within me, surrounding me, just complete and unconditional acceptance. I was filled with peace and joy. And while traveling through this tunnel, I also became aware that I'd done this before. I'd died and gone back home like this before, and I knew I was going home to my spiritual home. And I felt complete peace about everything that was happening to me. And in this same period, I also remembered how the whole system works. And I had to laugh at myself for not remembering when I was human that I was ultimately a spiritual being having one of my many human being experiences as part of my ongoing spiritual journey. I don't know why it's like we know this, mm-hmm. but this experience reminds us, and that's one of the things that happens to people who have this experience, is that we begin to remember what we forgot when we became human.
So this experience reminded you of that, or brought it back to your remembrance, if you will.
Right, brought it back to me, triggered the memory.
We're all searching for our respective purpose in life, you know, that's a recurring theme in many corners as we move through these various programs here on Tell Me Your Story. And I'm wondering, is this something that you feel can be done? Have you done it since? Have you been able to actually recreate this experience of, I guess, what it's called? There's another question I have for you is, is this an out-of-body experience, or is this a life-after-death experience? Do you know the difference, and what are they?
Well, out-of-body does not necessarily mean afterlife. It's like I, during meditation, can have an out-of-body experience, but my body isn't in a death situation.
Okay.
I mean, my body was under the water while all of this was going on. And the reason I know this was different from other experiences is that I've been a water person all my life. I was a water skier and a swimmer and a diver and a scuba diver. And you know, I did all water sports and body surfing. And, you know, there were times when I got caught under the water when something happens, whether it was a wave or I had a couple of accidents, water skiing, where I fought to get to the surface. My body was reacting and my mind was in survival mode and I was trying to hold my breath and get to the surface. But none of that happened during this experience. So what happened was I accepted that I was going to die. It was a very calm, peaceful, rational decision that I was going to die, and I had to choose which way I was going to die because of what was happening to me. And I just breathed in the water knowing that I was going to die, and everything went blank. And that's when all of a sudden I found myself up above the river looking down.
So you had the physical body experience, which you do remember.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went to black.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly your vision was restored, and there you were above it all. Going back to the issue of purpose, why do you think this happened?
To me?
Mm-hmm. What was the purpose in all of this? Because in essence, this sort of brings us to why we are here today with you.
Well, I think it has more to do, not so much to do with me, as more to do with the times that we're in, that it's time for humanity to raise their level of consciousness. We've got to get out of this animalistic early brainstem response to everything, that it's anger and hate and vengeance. And, you know, we're coming from a lower chakra area, and we're stuck in that position. And the only way to get people to think differently is for people to go through this experience. And we're talking about, I don't know, 11 million people or something that they're assuming have had this experience. There's got to be some reason other than just, whoopee, this was fun.
And you don't accept sciences or the medical profession's explanation that these are just synapses firing as the body is shutting down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This, because you came back, obviously. You're here talking to us.
Yeah. I mean, that's just silly. You know, I understand. I have a scientific mind, too. I don't believe in these things at face value. It's taken me 36 years to come to where I am right now. And, you know, it's like I've analyzed this and I've studied this and I've read probably thousands of experiences and talked to a lot of people and communicated with a lot of people. And it's just so much more than the brain shutting down and making you feel good about it. That science, you know, it's like anoxia, and so the brain has a, it turns on its survival mechanism and sends you to this pretty place so you're not afraid. Well, you know, what's the sense in that even if there isn't something more beyond this?
Well, now, in this, because of this experience and with the subsequent years that followed, you actually began to put together some various writings, and in particular, the one that intrigued me was the Transition Guides, Teachers of the Guidance, the Guidebook to Conscious Dying into the Clear Light. I mean, you and I, we've chatted quite a bit before this program about this whole process, which actually ties into, it's more than just a fascination for me, because just because of your being scheduled on the program and you're listed up on the website as our guest for this week, I've received quite a number of emails of inquiry of people who have had these experiences as well, and I certainly would encourage them if they'd like to give a call. We're here to take your call, whether you're listening along the central coast of California or you're listening somewhere else in the world live via streaming on the internet through richarddugan.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our number here in Santa Barbara and the central coast is 805-564-1290 or 866-564-1290, and we'd love to hear from you. So let's talk a little bit about where you are today, and the we'll stay away from the purpose per se of your life, because you've kind of come into that. So let's talk about what it is that you're helping others to do now through this Transition Guides.
Well, this is kind of the culmination of the work that I've been doing for these past years. First, let me explain that back in 1971, this was not known. Nobody talked about this. About the only place you could find this is in the Bible, where, you know, people had experiences and then they all thought they were talking to God, and, you know, and then they made up this religion around it. So in 1971, I think Raymond Moody wrote his book in 1972, but in 1971, people weren't talking about this. So when it happened to me, I psychologically, you could say it tore apart my consciousness in some way, because nothing made sense anymore. And there was nobody I could talk to about it. So the people that I did try to tell were just like, you know, pat you on the head and say, you know, just give it a couple days and it'll go away, patronizing me and making me feel like, you know, I flipped out, whereas I knew that that wasn't true. And so I had to keep it inside of me for a long time, and it totally wrecked my life. I ended up getting divorced and moved away, and this happened and that happened, and, you know, just my life was just a wreck for many, many years, and still had nobody to talk to about it.
Don't you hate when the universe does that?
Oh, man.
Throws you stuff
rough
like that, and
yeah,
completely turns your apple cart upside down, and now you got to start picking pears.
Yeah, you know, it's true. I had to do things that I never thought of. You know, my life was in a completely different direction now. I was just a housewife. You know, never thought about doing anything else. Raising my children, that was it.
So how'd you write the fruit cart, so to speak?
About 15 years later, I'm thinking, I had moved several times. I had changed my life and what I was doing, and I happened to be in a light center one day and was looking through books. And I picked up a book, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was by Ruth Montgomery, and she talked about walk-ins.
Yes.
And walk-ins are people who think that they've basically died, or their consciousness somehow left their body and another consciousness came into their body. So they were like a different person, but in that same body.
Mm-hmm.
But she did explain something about the experience that suddenly rang a bell to me and said, wow, somebody else knows what this is. So that started me on a path of seeking, and that gradually evolved. I went back to school about 7 years after my experience, and that's where I got my first master's degree, because I had never planned to go back to school. As I said, I was a housewife, not doing anything but raising kids. So here I went back to school. I got my bachelor's degree, and I got my master's degree, and then I began counseling and consulting, and my degree is not so much in individual counseling. I develop programs, do a needs assessment, and develop a program to basically in communities, like school kids who have a problem or, you know, some population. We dealt with populations rather than individuals. So that's why that's how I got into the program development area. My first attempt was in stress management. And I started that before anybody knew what stress was. And now, you know, everybody's talking about stress, that being the cause of all kinds of illnesses and mental problems and everything else. And then from there, my sister and I opened a mind-body-spirit center where she did body work. And after she released all the emotions from the body work that she did, they'd come into me, and I'd have them talk about, you know, stuff that was going on. That led me into wanting to become a hypnotherapist. Then I got interested in past life regression. So it's like it's been an evolution, and where I am now is is developing a course and trying to teach people how to die consciously. That doesn't mean awake, but aware.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens, and the name escapes me, I think it's Borgia. He was a guy who transcribed, I forget what you call it, sort of like automatic writing, where he just wrote down stuff. And one of the messages that he got was that one of the problems is that when people die, they arrive on the other side confused. They don't know they've died, because it's so similar to what we are experiencing now that we don't realize we're dead. And that's why people who want to contact their loved ones who have died, they may be standing right next to them, jumping up down, screaming, but we don't see them. We don't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Because our consciousness is not in that's reality.
Sounds to me a little bit like the universe is getting a little tired of us transitioning to the other side in that confused state and says, you know what, we're going to
exactly.
start creating these experiences
mm-hmm.
for the people on the other side.
So they can come back and explain it so that you guys can get it right.
And come back through the other way, not confused, and continue to move on without having to go through all of this reorientation, because we're getting tired of the reorientation classes. By the way, that book by Ruth Montgomery was Aliens Among Us.
That's it.
And
yeah.
I have read that. It's been a long time since I've read that work.
Yeah.
But it is a fascinating dialogue as far as what we're talking about here. Now, when you talk about teaching people how to die consciously, and again, you made the differentiation between not necessarily being awake, but being aware, you're talking about training people to do it for themselves, or how to train people to help other people become reach that level?
Both.
Okay. All right. So
both.
We're covering all the angles here in that regard.
Right.
Okay.
If you have somebody who's consciously aware to begin with, they can probably do this themselves if they've done meditation, guided imagery, that sort of thing, because those are the tools that we use to teach people to come to a peace within, to do forgiveness work and gratitude work, so that they're getting rid of their karma, getting rid of that baggage, and they're freeing themselves up from all of that, so they don't have to go through what the Tibetans call the bardo, which is kind of this, lost valley where you go through and you're bombarded by all the bad things you did in your life and the people that you hurt and things that you said and things that you did that were, you know, so if you get rid of all that before you die, then you transition right into the light. You don't have to go through, we call it a life review now, but we do the life review before you die. And that way you're clear, kind of cleared for takeoff to go right to the light.
Hmm. Well, we're going to continue talking about this as we continue through the hour. I want to let our listeners know, first of all, you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is Diane Goebel. She has written the book Transition Guides. It's here to help you to become more aware of the process. And we'll talk more about that as we continue. She has a website called transitionguidetraining.org. All one word. Isn't the 21st century a wonderful thing? transitionguidetraining.org. I received an album about 1986 from someone, and they put a letter inside, printed on both sides. It was all jammed together. There were no spaces. There were no. That was unbelievable. She can also be reached at transitionguide@mac.com, transitionguide@mac.com, and we have a link at richarddugan.com. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Richard Dugan, and my email address. My email address, I just created this one, tellmeyourstory@richarddugan.com. That's correct. tellmeyourstory@richarddugan.com. That's Richard, D-U-G-A-N.com. That's also the website, richarddugan.com. Give us a call this afternoon. We would like to take your call and have you talk to Diane. Maybe you've had a similar experience that maybe it's troubling you a little bit. Maybe you're having a little difficulty comprehending what has happened to you, and maybe you're among that 11 million people that has had these experiences, and that would be something we'll talk about in our second half here, Diane, is helping people to better cope with this experience so that they can realize that there isn't anything wrong with them, that they're okay. They've had an experience that only 11 million out of 6 billion have had, and that is a small percentage, but that it's important for people to understand what it is and how to, I guess, put it to work for themselves. As we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, our phone number is 564-1290, 564-1290. Outside the area, 866-564-1290. This is Tell Me Your Story. I am Richard Dugan, and I certainly hope you will stay with us as we continue talking with the author of Transition Guides, Teachers of the Guidebook to Conscious Dying into the Clear Light. Diane Goebel is my guest. Once again, those phone numbers, 564-1290 and 866-564-1290. Send me an email. Tell me your story at richarddugan.com. And we will be back in just a moment. Remember the stories your family used to tell? When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth? Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time. Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 708-9804. Fast Forward, it's the right direction for preserving your family's memories. Just call 708-9804. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. We encourage you to give us a call at 866-564-1290, 866-564-1290. You can also reach us locally here at just 564-1290 right here on the Central Coast. You can hear us at AM 1290 on the radio dial. You can also catch us on the internet live streaming at richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. We're talking with Diane Goebel and Transition Guides. Stay with us. Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest is Diane Goebel. She has written a book. It's a training manual, if you will, Transition Guides, Teachers of the Guidebook to Conscious Dying into the Clear Light. And we're talking about transitioning. I have to say, Diane, that I've sort of adopted the phrase and or the word just transitioning instead of using the word dying. I don't know. I don't necessarily perceive that as a fear on my part of that. It's just trying to demystify it and take the fear out of it, which is part of the whole aspect of confusion that we're talking about near the end of the last segment. And that's something that we will talk about a little bit more as well. But in this training process, for those who are wanting to transition, especially those, say, with terminal illnesses, let's say in a hospice, which you have experience in, is this training for anybody, or do they need to meet certain minimum qualifications?
Well, there's certainly a levels of training. You can go anywhere from nurses. There's a new degree in thanatology now that is incorporating some of this information.
What's that again?
Thanatology.
Thanatology.
T-H-A-N.
Okay, thanatology.
Right, it's a study of death.
Okay.
And so they've developed some colleges, I guess, that teach nurses mainly. But spiritual ministry is also incorporating some of this. I'm hoping to get it into hospice. Hospice does something very similar, but what I'm doing is from a near-death perspective. It's a little bit different because I'm talking about things that they don't incorporate, like in hospice. Like, you won't find the nurses talking about some of the things that I will talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to train, the people that I want to train right now are mainly alternative health practitioners. So if you're a yoga instructor or you teach meditation or you do Reiki, you do hypnotherapy, because those are the modalities that are already incorporated in the program. So if you already teach yoga or if you already teach meditation, you're already halfway there as far as the training goes. My program involves learning to teach meditation and write guided imagery scripts to help people work through their life review and their forgiveness work and so forth. So you have to, a little background would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And people can make, this is non-denominational. I'm not of any particular religion. I'm just giving the near-death experience perspective. So anybody who is in that area is welcome to take the training. Now, if you're a caregiver for a parent, you can get the book, which is separate from the training manual, and by reading the book, you can work with your loved one who's going through the terminal part of their illness. But the sooner you start, the better. If you wait till 3 days before, it's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's too much going on. The person is already in the process. The nearing death awareness begins, could be a week, 2 weeks before the actual death. So the sooner you can start, if you're given a six-month death sentence from the doctors where they say, we can do no more, take them home, that's a good amount of time if you have the 6 months. Unfortunately, most people wait until about a week before they die to go to hospice. So there's kind of a gap right now, and that's what I'm trying to fill. I'm trying to get people out there who are doing this so that people are aware of it.
Are you familiar with anybody else out there that is training people in this kind of process?
I recently, and only because one of the students found my website, found out about a place up in Oregon where it's kind of a Dutch, these people are from Holland, and they have a kind of a program like this, and so it's a degree program, training people, mostly ministers, to go through the dying process with a person. So it's like we're setting up a profession where people will actually be going through the process with the person. Mine includes the guidebook for conscious dying, which is something that the person and their transition guide will work on together to write something similar to what goes on in the Tibetan Book of the Dying, where they walk you through.
Mm-hmm.
So you set it up beforehand. You know, if you're a terrible person, you're going to have more to work to do than somebody, you know, than a nun, let's say.
Okay.
You know, and we're all somewhere in between there. And so the people will help them work through it, and then they will read it to them as they are dying. Because as we're dying, we're distracted by things that are going on around us. Like for me, it was just awesome. I'm going, oh, look at that. Oh. Well, if you know what's going to go on beforehand, then you're not so distracted and you go right to the light.
I was watching a movie some time ago about this process, and I probably take the perspective of the individual who was racing to get to this dying person because he wanted this person to share with him what they were experiencing as they were experiencing it. And he was there at the guy's bedside at the very last. What's happening? The guy was in tears. And what do you see? What do you hear? And I wish I could remember the name of the movie, but it was along those same lines. I'm kind of like that person. I'm very curious about what's on the other side, if in fact there is even an other side. Maybe it's just a different perspective more than anything else. I would love to have the experience of going over there to, for lack of a better term, to see what's there and then come back here, because I've heard so many things about what it's like, but not from anybody that's been there and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually they stay.
Yes.
Apparently, it must be pretty nice.
I know most of my clients die, so I don't know how they did. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's a fascinating subject, and I find that interesting that now there's a degree program, which is kind of exciting in one sense. And again, I'm coming across more people who are having these experiences, and there are those who actually are now consciously having these experiences,
mm-hmm.
but they're not dying, but they are going through that process of leaving the body. Do you see a major difference between that out-of-body experience? And I mean, you sort of defined it before, but is there still some? I've heard that there's a string, there's a like a silver cord
silver
that if
cord.
It's cut, boom, you're off. You're like right. a hot air balloon, and you're just going up, and you will not reattach to the body.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. The first time I had an out of body experience, I was taking a class in self hypnosis, and this was back in early '80s, maybe. And I rode my bike up this hill. I was down in Los Angeles in the Valley area, and I rode up further, and there was a river, and I got off my bike, and I sat there, and I meditated, went through this whole self-hypnosis thing that this teacher had taught, and all of a sudden, boom, I went out the top of my head, but the top of my head was attached to the top of my head. When I realized I had gone out of my body, and it freaked me out so much that I went zap right back into my body. Because it's crazy. What on earth? And then I went and asked the teacher, and he explained to me about the silver cord that you're attached to that. So if you do have an out-of-body experience, you'll be able to come back. But if you die, then that's severed, and then you don't come back.
It's almost like the supply line that the astronauts have when they do
exactly.
those spacewalks.
Exactly. And I talk a lot about that in the book, how that all happens.
And it's interesting that there's that real life. Example of, you have these guys out there in the vacuum of space that are tethered by this lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have that same experience. And that's interesting that so much of our current existence seems to mirror the other world.
Well, look at the caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes through, it's called metamorphosis, but it goes into a cocoon and goes through a transformation process and comes out a butterfly. And if you look at that, that's what we do. You know, we're in this caterpillar stage, and then we go into the dying stage, and we go through this transformation, and then we're free, and we're free to go off into this other realm. So everything that, I mean, that's why I like nature so much, because it reveals so much about what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very exciting.
Did you, at the time of your near-death experience, ever think, you know what, I don't want to go back?
Yes, I did.
Well, why did you come back?
Well, I know we're running short on time, but it's the whole experience that I went through on the other side with this being of light took me on a tour, and I learned all kinds of things. And when it came down to my choice about coming back, I was reluctant. And so I was told that I had more to do on my spiritual path and more to do for humankind, and that if I went back, I'd be given information that would be helpful to me on my journey. And so during this conversation, apparently I decided that I would come back.
Mm-hmm.
And my head suddenly popped out of the river, down the river from where the accident had happened, and I was fine.
Wow.
So it was reluctant at first, but then I realized that there was more to do, and that this life is really important. It's not something to be dismissed lightly.
Right.
It's not something that we want to get out of quickly. We're here to learn. We have a purpose in being here, and that's to learn about everything we can learn about that interests us.
Well, I know this interview would be far different if you hadn't come back.
Certainly would. There's a lot of dead air there.
Have you been able to re-experience that or recreate it or go through that kind of an experience again, or because again we can differentiate between out of body and near death. If your body is in crisis mode, as yours was on the river, near death as opposed to sitting in a chair in your home and leaving your body. But have you been able to recreate those consciously, those experiences?
Believe me, I've tried many times, and I have had many different experiences, but none that even compared to that experience.
Let's get into the training a little bit. We've talked a little bit about that there's sort of a minimum requirement. What are some of the first steps that a trainee, we'll call them, will go through to reach, and what level will they reach? A graduate or whatever? What's the certificate of completion kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm offering a certificate of completion. Until I can get it into CEU so that nurses and so forth can earn credits for it.
But what's step one?
Mainly that they already be some sort of teacher or practitioner of the healing arts, minister, that are, they're already doing this kind of work and have people that they can present this to once they're trained. I suggest that people enroll in hospice training as a volunteer and spend some time with dying patients, especially if they're not sure that they want to do this, because that will give them the opportunity to spend time. And, for instance, there's an extremely good book called Final Gifts. It was written by two hospice nurses, and it's all about their experiences with dying patients. So it gives you know, you were asking about how to... people who are dying, what they're going through. Well, they kind of laid it out, what people go through as they're dying, and it's extremely interesting. So I do have quite a few books on my book list. Another book I have is by Maria Dancing Heart called The Last Adventure in Life.
Yes.
She was a former guest of yours.
Yes, absolutely.
And she and I have become friends because we're kind of in the same field. And I suggest her book as a textbook because it's full of stories and prayers and things that you can talk about and read about and help a person who's in that transition process, you know, earlier on, that they can open up conversations so that they can begin to talk about this. So there are, you know, if you have never meditated, you should learn to meditate. If you've never been to a hypnotherapist or used guided imagery, you should do that. Heal your own wounds, you know, do some personal growth work and figure out who you are before you try to help other people. Do your own forgiveness and gratitude work, because you're going to be helping other people do it, so it helps, you know, if you have done it yourself.
Well, if people would like to get in touch with you, they can do so through your email address, which is transitionguide@mac.com. You can get to her website through richarddugan.com. Just go to the show's page. Page 2 is where this interview will be located, and then there will be a link to her website as well, and you can get more information about Transition Guides. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, and we're talking about that process that does, in many cases, evoke a great deal of anxiety, if not down and outright fear. We are trying to demystify this process. It's no different than maybe walking through the sliding doors into a department store. Maybe if you think of it as going shopping. I don't know. Just trying to put a humorous light on it. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us. Remember the stories your family used to tell? When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth? Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time. Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 708-9804. Fast Forward, it's the right direction for preserving your family's memories. Just call 708-9804. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and you are listening to a program that's dealing with death and dying, as I like to call it, transitioning. Transition Guides is the title of the book, and my guest is Diane Goebel. And Diane, as we get close to wrapping up our program, I'm going to ask you to answer a couple more questions. But before we do that, I want to give out information. It is transitionguide@mac.com. That's MAC.com. You can also email tellmeyourstory@richarddugan.com. Stay tuned. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you for joining us. We still have some time left, and we have a special guest on the line joining us, along with Diane Goebel, who is the author of Transition Guides. We also have Maria Dancing Heart on the line, who's been on our program before, and it's nice to have you call in and share this time as we get close to the end. I'm going to put this question to Diane, and Maria, certainly you're open to answer it as well. Why is it that people who have these experiences of the near-death experience, and then they come back, say they experienced absolutely nothing, there was nothing there?
That's a good question, and I'm sure scientists will have to look into that. But I don't know. I think that sometimes the person doesn't need to know. It's based on...
Don't say it. Don't say a need-to-know basis.
It's more based on where you are spiritually, and I don't know. I can't even explain it, but it would be an interesting study for somebody to do. Maybe Maria has some insight on that.
Maria?
Not really, but I would agree. I have a feeling it has to do with one's own awareness, consciousness level, that kind of thing.
The other issue is, you know, some people come back, they saw Jesus, and another guy saw Buddha, and another guy was in his happy hunting grounds, and, you know, so the experiences are not all exactly the same. So something about our expectation, I had no expectation. Actually, what I expected happened, everything went black, but then what I didn't expect happened, and I became aware again. So I don't know. I don't know how to explain it.
Which is probably the best honest answer there is. If you don't know, you don't know. And it's hard. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that there's no manual. There is no book that we can turn to for definitive answers. All we can do is turn to books by people who've had these experiences, and it's their observation, their opinion, their perspective, which sometimes can be helpful.
Some people see the devil.
Uh-oh.
You know, and I don't see that there's a devil. So it's like it's got to have something to do with what's already in your mind or your evolution, because I believe in reincarnation, that, you know, maybe in this life you were meant to, but in another life maybe you had an experience and you weren't meant to evolve, because it's certainly a way of raising one's consciousness you know, when that happens, and you have to be able to do something about it, or it can affect you negatively.
What about you, Maria? Have you had any kind of experiences like what we've been talking about on the program today?
No, but it's interesting you ask that, because I have a question for Diane, which is, listening to you, you know, I think about my work with hospice, and in a way, even though I haven't had a near-death experience, by working with hospice clients, I feel like I've been given a gentle process of the same, you know, that my consciousness has gradually opened up or expanded. And some people talk about sitting literally with their loved one and holding their hand or something as they're dying, and they have that almost a similar experience just by being with them or being so closely connected to them or something.
Yeah,
but
I wondered,
how do we translate this to the wider community? I mean, you touched on this early on in the talk, you know, that we need this so desperately in our society today to help everyone know this expansiveness. But is it going to take just having this one? Do you have to get close to death before you can experience this? Or isn't
Good
there
question.
An easier way? And then, you know, it's like we're often preaching to the choir. When I speak about my book, I'm often preaching or speaking with people who already know what I know. So it's like, how do we get past the barriers around death?
I know. Well, I think public awareness is a big thing, and you know, certainly Richard having this program and the kinds of people that he talks to is getting the word out, and more people are asking about it and curious. And I certainly think hospice workers who are close to people who are dying are able to tell what they go through. And, oh, yeah, she sat up in bed and she said she saw her mother. You know, it's like if these things are happening, there's got to be something to it.
Right.
Yeah,
and we
right.
need to look into it more.
Well, I will tell both of you that I am communicating with an individual who is of a very specific faith, who is has had these experiences for 20 years, and one of these days we're going to have him on talking about his experiences with these people within that faith and how he's tried to work through that to educate them on what's happening to him, because this is not something that's new as he's researched it and as he's experienced it. Diana, I want to thank you so much for joining our program. And Maria, I thank you for calling in. It's great to have you on the program again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you. wonderful. Yes.
Well, can I just tell your listeners that I have a free ebook offer? What I did, I've been answering emails for the past 12 years on my other website from people who have questions and they want to talk to a near-death experiencer.
Okay.
This involves near-death experiences, fear of death, death and dying, grief, paranormal, afterlife, suicide, questions that people have asked me, and I put it into an ebook. And if your listeners will just email me and ask, and maybe put your name, Richard Dugan, in the subject line.
Either Richard Dugan or tell me your story.
Right. I will be glad to send them the PDF file for the ebook.
Terrific. And that email address is transitionguide@mac.com.
Right.
And again, the website transition, well, I don't have it in front of me, but you can go to my website, richarddugan.com, and you can link up to Diane's website. And again, Maria Dancing Heart, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Maria.
And both of you stay on the line. We'll be talking with you after the program. Hope you will stay with us next Saturday. We have an interesting guest. Almeen is her name, and she has the ability basically to assist individuals with discovering their own personal path. We'll talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. Love to all, and have a great day.
To understand you, oh, won't you walk with me, talk.
Maybe what has happened with a lot of these people, my thought is that you said that everything went black. Maybe they get to that point where everything has gone black, but they haven't transitioned over to the other part where you start experiencing yourself. And
another thing is it doesn't seem to matter the length of time because some of the stories I've read and people I've talked to, it's been hours, and they had barely any experience that they remember. My experience couldn't been more than a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like I was there forever.
Yeah, well, time probably doesn't mean much.
Oh, well, there is no time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's so different.
Yeah.
Everybody's different. I had looked up in that e-book that I have. I remember there was a question that somebody asked me that, and I was trying to pick some information out of the answer, but I couldn't read it fast enough. But
yeah.
I say it's probably an unanswerable question, may have to do with the level of spiritual development. In some cases, NDEs are told they won't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it may be enough to know that they died and were brought back, but the purpose of an NDE seems to be to set the person on their spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And even those who don't have any recall seem to be more attracted to spirituality than they were before, so maybe it doesn't matter whether they remember everything.
Yeah, exactly. All we know is that there is something out there, right?
Yeah, and like I say, with so many people having these experiences, there's got to be something to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can't be all made up. And, go back to the Bible or ancient. I mean, I am a student of history, and I went back into ancient Egypt and Tibet and the Romans and the Greeks and all of that, and all of this is connected. And near-death experiences have been happening all of those ages, and people have described them differently because their lives were different.
Hmm.
You know, and people today who have them describe them in more modern terms.
Yeah.
And one of the things I read that the pharaohs, in order to become a pharaoh at some point in their reign, they put them in a sarcophagus, and they had let them have a near-death experience.
Wow. That's...
Because if they survived and had an experience, then they're worthy to be feral.
I see.
You can gain universal knowledge and bring some of it back to you with you.
Interesting. Why do you think that when we reincarnate that we don't remember our past lives?
I think because it would be too much.
Yeah.
I think it would be overwhelming to know all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you were a murderer or maybe you were just this awful person, or maybe you were a great person, and then it would affect your life, this life.
You're just plain rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
just plain rude.
That really does make a lot of sense because, you know, I mean, it might be a lot of baggage for a lot of people to try to, you know, sift through, you know.
Sure. I mean, suppose you were, Hitler or Genghis Khan or...
Mm-hmm.
And then you came back and you were a stable boy. It's like, how would you deal with
Yeah,
living
exactly.
Like that, knowing what you were in the previous life.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and you take care.
You do the same, and we will stay in touch.
Okay, great.
All righty.
Bye, Amarita.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.